Let's turn our attention back to the building of the temple by Solomon. We're looking at 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 2, as we begin today. And we keep in mind that 2 Chronicles chapter 3, starting at verse 3, is a parallel source for all of this information. In fact, the 2 Chronicles passage tells us that Solomon was using the old cubit for the measurements. And that cubit is 20.7 inches as kind of an average when we check it out. And I'm using that longer length in all of my conversions of the cubit information that we see here. So that's why mine's a little bit different than maybe some of the footnotes that you're seeing in your own Bibles. So Solomon is starting this project right around middle of May of 977 BC, I believe. And he is having the big blocks of the footprint of the shrine building itself put in place first. And since this is happening in the 480th year of the Exodus, in the spring of that year, we know that they'll only get about 5 months of work in before the 63rd sabbatical year of Israel begins. And so they'll have to take a year off from the building of the temple. And then it just so happens that the year following that will be the ninth year of Jubilee, and so they'll have to take a second year off from work. But it will be times of great celebration and consideration of how blessed Israel is to be living in the time when this temple is being built. So even though it will take a total of 7 years before the temple is built, only about 5 of those years are actually active building years because of the sabbatical year and the year of Jubilee. So the year that we start, I believe, again, is 977, and here are the measurements starting in 1 Kings 6, 2. The house that King Solomon built for He Who Is was 60 cubits long, so that's 103 point 5 feet interior measurement. 20 cubits wide, that would be 34.5 feet wide, and 30 cubits high, that's 51.71 feet up at the ceiling. So that's a nice high ceiling inside of this big stone structure that's being put together. So that's the basic building. The vestibule in front of the nave of the house was 20 cubits long, equal to the width of the house, and 10 cubits deep in front of the house. Now, what they're talking about here is the porch, or the entry area to this larger building that we were just talking about. This is going to end up being a high tower over the top of it, as it's mentioned over in 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 4. So this gate area is to draw attention to the entry point to the sanctuary. It's 20 cubits wide, that's how we'd actually say, because that's how wide the sanctuary building is. So it's 34.5 feet across. And it's 10 cubits deep in front of the house. That would be 17.25 feet. So that's how far across this porch you're going to walk before you get to the front door of the actual sanctuary building. And its height over in 2 Chronicles 3:4 is 120 cubits. That's 207 feet towering up above you as you go through this porch area, this vestibule, heading for the actual shrine building. Now, verse 4, he made for the house windows with recessed frames. Now, what we have to imagine here is that the exterior walls of the tabernacle, or excuse me, the temple, are not thin. They are big blocks of stone. And they're stacked up on top of each other to make this great big stone enclosure that we just described. And then there's a roof put over the top of it. There needs to be natural light coming into this area. So there's been big sections left open, probably up toward the top of the structure, which are going to be as wide as whatever these blocks are. It could be 4 cubits. So that's going to be almost 9 feet by the time you make the it's 6.9 feet as some of these blocks. Might be even bigger than that. So that's going to be the open area that light and ventilation can come through. And so that's what's being talked about here about recessed frames. Now, some of your Bibles might have footnotes about blocked lattice windows, because you don't want birds flying into the temple. So there's going to be some sort of barrier that lets both light and air through, but not birds. And so that's how you should picture the inside window area of this structure. Verse number 5. He also built a structure against the wall of the house. Now, this is the external wall of the house. And this can get confusing. So let's try to break it down. We've got the big block basic sanctuary building in place. But now they're going to build another building around the outside of the three sides, north, west, and south, that don't have an access into the building itself. These are going to be storage areas, and it's going to be 3 stories high, wrapping around the three sides of the building. And this is how it's described. He also made a structure against the wall of the house, running around the walls of the house, both the nave and the inner sanctuary. And he made side chambers all around. The lowest story was 5 cubits broad. So that's 8.625 feet across. So that's, it's a small room, but remember, these are storage rooms. The middle story, so the next level up, was 6 cubits broad. So that's 10.35 feet wide. And the third, that's the top level, was 7 cubits broad. So that's 12.075 feet across for this storage area. And the reason why the one on the top is larger than the lower ones is because of this next part. It says, for around the outside of the house, he made offsets of the wall in order that the supporting beam should not be inserted into the walls of the house. So the basic sanctuary building is a big block structure. They did not want to make any type of indentations into that structure from the outside. So they built up little platforms against it for the floor decking of these 3 stories that were going to be built as a storage annex wrapping around the shrine building. And so these three outsets from the wall were about 1 cubit wide each, just enough room to secure a good beam on that would extend out and be the decking platform for each of these three stories. And so that's why the top story is wider than the lower stories. Okay, I hope that makes good sense. One of the things I wish that I could do is work very easily in 3D design so that I could kind of break some of this stuff down and make it available online. Now, there are some places that have tried to do this. Unfortunately, the ones that I've seen have not been as judicious with some of the measurements, nor have they kind of zeroed in and shown some of the very detailed parts of the plan like I would want to do. All right, so verse number 7. Very important information. When the house was built, it was with stone prepared at the quarry so that neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron was heard in the temple while it was being built. Solomon's temple was effectively a modular build. Everything was fitted together off-site first to make sure it was exactly perfect in its fit. Then it was clearly marked on the plan and shipped up to the Temple Mount, where it was then just set in place. No trimming was necessary. No sanding off was necessary because all of that had been taking place off-site. And so that's why none of these finishing tools were needed in the actual temple site itself. And this leads to an interesting psalm that says, "The stone which the builders have rejected has become the chief stone of the corner." The Israeli people were in the habit of, when they built a prominent building, the last stone that they put in place was the most important stone. It was the dedicatory stone. And it was usually on the corner at the top somewhere of the actual building project. Well, the story goes that during the building of Solomon's temple, as all of these stones were fitted elsewhere and then sent up marked, that somehow the dedicatory stone was not marked properly. And when it arrived, the people putting everything together didn't know where it fit. So they rejected it as a mistake, and they threw it off into the offsides of the building area, and grass grew up around it, and people kind of stumbled over it and things like that. Until finally, on the day that they knew they should be finishing the temple, they were looking around for the dedicatory stone, and it could be found nowhere until they found it in the weeds. And this became kind of a big joke, that the most important stone in the whole building was the one that the builders rejected early in the process. And this psalm is referred to by Jesus and also by the apostles as referring to Jesus himself. And that's not funny. He was rejected by the leadership of Israel and caused to be crucified, when in fact he was the most important part of God's plan. And he becomes the head of the corner, the chief stone of the living temple of God. And so all of that comes from this reality that we just read, that the temple of Solomon was kind of put together as a modular construction, everything marked ahead of time. All right, back to this annex building, the wraparound on three sides. Verse 8, the entrance for the lowest story was on the south side of the house, and one went up by stairs to the middle story and from the middle story to the third. So there were access points to go up to the different stories, makes good sense, because you needed to be able to go into all the multiple storage rooms in order to get things like grain and oil and wine and clothing, because that's what all of these rooms were for, is easy access by the priests and the Levites for things needed in the worship ceremonies in and around the sanctuary building. Verse number 9. So he built the house and finished it, and he made the ceiling on the house of beams and planks of cedar. So the top of the sanctuary building had great big beams that went across. And then those beams were covered either by blocks or lumber from the cedar and cypress. And then on the inside, underneath, there was paneling put in place because it's going to be gilded as well. Verse number 10. He built the structure against the whole house, 5 cubits high, and it was joined to the house with timbers of cedar. So everything is now in place. The big block structure, the annex building around it. The annex building is capped off with cedar, and so is the big block structure as well. And so now it's all finished on the outside. And by now, we're probably several years into the construction project. In fact, we might be fairly close to the end of it. But we're not done, because there's a lot of detail work that needs to be finished on the inside. 1 Kings chapter 6, 11. Now the word of He Who Is came to Solomon concerning this house that you are building. If you will walk in my statutes and obey my rules and keep all my commandments and walk in them, then I will establish my word with you, which I spoke to David your father. And I will dwell among the children of Israel and will not forsake my people Israel. So God comes to Solomon again to remind him, this is very provisional. I will accept this palace, this temple, as the physical focal point for me living among my people Israel, provided you and they continue to be holy as I am holy. That's the deal. I will accept the temple if you will accept my covenant and my holiness. And unfortunately, over time, the deal will be broken repeatedly by the Israeli people of many different generations, until finally, in 587 BC, God will call the deal off and have the temple, Solomon's temple, completely erased from history by the Babylonians, because they didn't do the provisions of the covenant that Solomon was just now reminded of. And so that's the sad reality of where we're going with this. 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 14. So Solomon built the house and finished it. So that's the actual main structure itself. He lined the walls of the house on the inside with boards of cedar. From the floor of the house to the walls of the ceiling, he covered them on the inside with wood, and he covered the floors of the house with boards of cedar. So all of this has now been paneled on the inside. You don't see the stone blocks. You see this cedar paneling and cypress paneling. Then it says in verse 16, he built 20 cubits of the rear of the house with boards of cedar from the floor to the walls, and he built this within as an inner sanctuary as the most holy place. All right. So he finishes the inside of the house, but at the back of the sanctuary area, he builds an internal house that is 20 cubits cubed. Now remember, 20 cubits in this longer cubit, that's 34.5 feet. So he builds this Holy of Holies inside the holy place. And that's inside of this special place, that's where the Ark of the Covenant is going to be placed. This is effectively the internal throne room of God Most High, of He Who Is. And this it's going to be very decorated inside of there. Now, this also means that there's about 10 cubits of airspace right above this most holy place. And that's probably going to be an access place for the maintenance of the veil that's going to hang down in front of the most holy place. Okay, verse number 17. The house, that is the nave in front of the inner sanctuary, was 40 cubits long. So that's the area where the priests are going to do their daily work, is the 40 cubits of floor space in front. So 69 feet in front of the most holy place. The cedar within the house was carved in the form of gourds and open flowers. All was cedar. No stone was seen. Now, the wall is made of thick paneling. And that paneling is then hand-carved by professionals to represent all sorts of beautiful things. The natural things are gourds and open flowers. The supernatural things, we'll find out later, and this is actually from over in 2 Chronicles, would be two-dimensional representations of cherubim. Remember, cherubim are the four-faced, four-winged angelic creatures that are around the base of God's tower of power, His Shekinah glory. And they are also represented on the Ark of the Covenant. Now, when you represent them on the wall, though, that's a flat two-dimensional, even if you raise it up a little bit with some carving, you can only kind of show two of the faces and only two, probably, of the wings, of the four wings. And so that's also carved. So gourds, open flowers, and cherubim are everywhere. There's also precious stones that are set into these carvings. And there's gold that's overlaid on all of these carvings. And this makes the interior of the sanctuary a magnificent, beautiful place. You may remember I said that David had stored up several trillion dollars worth of materials. And so now all of those materials are being put in place by fine artistry to make this probably the number one wonder of the ancient world. Unfortunately, it didn't make the list because it was destroyed because of judgment. Okay, back to 1 Kings 6:19. The inner sanctuary he prepared in the innermost part of the house to set there the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is. This inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, and 20 cubits high, and he overlaid it with pure gold. He also overlaid an altar of cedar. And we'll talk about that altar later. Think about the Holy of Holies here. It's paneled with fine cedar paneling, which is then covered with gold, which more than likely was then polished to a high mirror finish. And then the Ark of the Covenant is going to be put into this mirrored box of God's presence. It would have been an amazing place to stand as the high priest once every year on the day of Yom Kippur to get the sense of God's eternal throne here on planet Earth at Jerusalem among the people that are the covenant people of God. So let's definitely get our imaginations ready for next week when we continue with some more from God's holy word.